week's episode of Loose Cannons, we talk about the scary crucible of horror. Hi, my name is Justin the Clue.
And I'm Matthew Kumar.
And you're listening to Loose Cannons. And on this week's episode, we're talking about Crucible of Horror, finally, after screwing up the name multiple times.
Yeah, Crucible of Horror, also now known as The Corpse, apparently, and also known as The Velvet House.
Yes, on Wikipedia, it says that that was the original name of the screenplay when it was going around, which is weird because, like, we're going to talk about the movie, but why does this movie have a Wikipedia entry?
Yeah, because Batman's Alfred, isn't it?
Michael Gow. Am I saying that right? Michael Gow? Michael
Goff, maybe? Goff? I don't know.
We don't know. But Crucible of Horror, not to be confused with Cauldron of Blood, and also not to be confused with Crucible of Terror. And I may have watched Crucible of Terror for 18 minutes and been very confused when I'm like, where's Michael Gow? How come he hasn't shown up yet?
Yeah, I looked up Crucible of Terror, and as a plot, very similar to Cauldron of Blood, right?
Also made in 1971. Yes, and Crucible of Terror starts the same way Cauldron of Blood does, with, like, statues and, like, the title going up. So I'm like, oh, I can understand why Cannon picked this one up. Nope, a completely different film. I don't know if it's great, didn't watch it all. Probably better than Crucible of Horror.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say about Crucible of Horror is if you've been following the podcast for a few episodes now, you'd be like, man, they watch nothing but reprehensible, disgusting movies. Well, I'd say that Crucible of Horror is a real nice way to get back to good old boring movies like we used to watch.
Ah, yes, because there's very little horror in Crucible of Horror, isn't there, Matthew?
I mean, there's as much horror as there is velvet, and I don't remember any velvet in this movie.
All right, so break down the plot for us a little bit.
It's. I mean, this is like a kind of a... it's kind of a hard one to go through beat by beat because it's one we've said this before where we say nothing happens in this movie, but this is a legit nothing happens in this movie, right?
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
More or less the plot is Michael Goff is like he's a controlling patriarch of the family, basically. He's very clean, he likes to wash his hands, and when his daughter goes out, he makes a habit of going and touching her bike seat. Which is pretty much the most horrific thing that happens in the movie, is the idea of an old man touching a lady's bike seat.
Well, there's some beatings that go on.
Oh, it's true. Basically, he's a very controlling father. He just doesn't like his daughter going out and doing stuff, and as a result, she's kind of straining against that. The film opens with something that never really comes up again, is that she comes home, he touches the bike seat, washes his hands, she goes into a room or something, and she, like, makes like acid or something. Do you remember this? She has like a perfume dispenser and she like pours like bubbly acid into it, puts it in a drawer. We never ever see that referenced again in the
movie. That's actually on the cover of the movie.
Yeah.
The Crucible of Horror is her pouring the acid, and underneath you see the corpse of Michael Gough. Because we're not going to be, there's no spoilers here because we don't want you to watch this movie.
Yeah.
We're going to say this right off the top. This is that they kill Michael Gough and they think he comes back as a ghost. That's what the plot of the movie is.
That's the plot, but that is being a charitable explanation of this plot.
It takes half an hour, 45 minutes for murder to start happening?
Yeah, it's like, I think it's more or less just over half an hour before the mother says to the daughter, let's kill him.
Yes.
Then it's about another 20 minutes before they do it. And then the rest of the film really doesn't make any sense at all. Like, because the idea is okay, the daughter's straining again, she wants to going out and being a young woman in the early 70s.
Which means there's a big deal made out of the fact that she bought a wig.
Yeah.
And she dressed up like...
she's got a real kind of, like, Scooby-Doo look, I think. Not Scooby-Doo the dog, but, like, Thelma or the other one. Oh, shit. Almost spilled my glass. I was so excited about it.
That was the most exciting thing that happened within the context of Crucible of Horror.
Yeah. What's the other one in Scooby-Doo called? That's how bored we are. I'm trying to remember the names of the characters in Scooby-Doo. Velma and...
Louise? Oh, man, I don't know.
You know, the pretty
Sarah
one.
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yes, yeah, yeah, she's got that kind of thing going on. And she's also kind of like the main, like, first half an hour is kind of set on the idea that they're all having dinner, but the daughter had stolen some money from some guy who comes to the house, tries to kiss her, and it's kind of weird because it kind of sets up the father figure who's supposed to be this mean patriarch. Like, he more or less stands up for his daughter against this guy. He, like, gives him the money, and he's like, look, he's like, oh, you know, just leave. I've given you the money. And don't you ever kiss her again. Like, he's very protective of her in a weird way, which makes the next scene almost kind of confusing. Because you're like, okay, so we're getting the sense that he's a bad guy, but he's done something that's kind of, like, quite, you know, protective of his daughter, at least in a sort of, like, a sort of understandable way. Mm-hmm. So what he does next is go upstairs and beat 7 bells out of her with, like, a bell or a stick or something. I don't even remember.
Yeah, it looks like a riding crop.
A riding crop, that's what he does. He beats 7 bells out of her with a riding crop and then takes the money that she'd hidden in her wig off of her while the rest of the family... The son, who's, like, this horrible sort of toady character called Rupert. There's this part I particularly remember where they're at dinner and the doorbell goes and the Michael Goff is like, ugh, that woman never answers the door. And so the son's like, come on, the daughter, go and answer the door. She's like, why don't you go and answer it? Like, with just, and this is all done with acting of the eyes. And then the father goes, you know, go and answer the door, daughter. And the son has such, like, a shitty anger. And afterwards, he's like, I'm the son. I don't have to answer the door. That I was like, I hate this guy.
But he's so played by Michael Goff's actual son.
Yeah, and she's played Michael Goff's daughter-in-law. So the daughter and son are, in fact, husband and wife. Possibly not at the point of this movie, but they definitely were, like, in a relationship or whatever. So that's kind of an interesting thing,
incestual,
I guess.
Incestual kind of thing. And it was Velma and Daphne. I'm sure that everyone listening is, yeah, like, it's Daphne! Daphne! How do you guys not know that?
Come on, you know how ideas work. If you're in a room with another person and you've forgotten something, that other person will immediately forget it also, because it's like...
yeah. Because your mind just goes blank.
Your mind just goes blank.
These people listening to this are not in this room.
Yeah.
And unless it's kind of a twist. And it's like, your only podcast listener is in your room.
Yeah, I mean, more or less before the beating is like the only thing that happens in this movie. So one thing we should know is in terms of like the canon aspect of this movie, this movie was funded by canon, not just distributed by it. Which is... one of those things where you're like, why did he do this exactly?
I wrote a note. I wrote, feels like a slice of life kitchen sink drama. Maybe they were going for like a horror Joe.
I mean, it's... The thing is kind of like for more or less the first 40 minutes. It's just like, oh, the mother who... I didn't really describe her. Like, she...
She's an artist.
She's an artist, but she really has like... She's a fragile woman, as it would be described at the time. You know, she takes sleeping pills and... she's very quiet and stuff, and the daughter's very strong-willed. And it's kind of like, oh, but them dealing with this horrible man in their lives, basically, and they're his horrible toady son, you know? But the only thing that really has, up to this point, you go, well, maybe canon would be interested, is the daughter takes her top off briefly, you know? Like,
it's, I don't even remember
yeah,
that
it's
part.
So brief that I only just barely registered it. I was like, oh, she took her top off, and then that's before she gets beaten.
Maybe Cauldron of Blood was such a huge hit. They're like, we need something like that.
Yeah, we need another title that's going to confuse people. People loved Cauldron of Blood so much that they'd be like, hey, tonight, guys, let's go out and see Cauldron of Blood. And you get to the cinema and Crucible of Horror is playing. And they're like, that's the film we wanted to see, right? Crucible of Horror?
No, I'm in Crucible of Terror.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of very confused horror fans.
Which also came out in 1971. And they're all pretty, like, stifling, like, not very memorable movies. Unless Crucible of Terror has an amazing climax.
It maybe does. I mean, who knows?
Let's just talk hypothetical about what Crucible of Terror could be. I'm joking. Let's get back into Cauldron of Blood. No, not Cauldron of Blood. Crucible of Horror.
But basically, Crucible of...
Horror.
What? Crucible of Horror. It comes to the point, at this point, where... I mean, we haven't really had that much about Michael Goff being an evil guy, right? Just beats his daughter very viciously, admittedly. But that's, like, all he's done at this point.
So, wait, are you trying to say, like, you know, he beats his daughter, but he's not that bad a guy?
Also, he touches her bike seat, which is kind of creepy. I just mean, like, in terms of, like... You know,
so,
like,
does he need to be, like...
You know, like in movies... They have to, like, set up how bad someone is.
Yeah, like they kick a dog or they...
And I just feel like in this one, all right, he's horrible, but, like, I don't know. I wasn't, like, really that into it. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh, I hope this guy dies.
It wasn't like, you're a big fan of Kung Fu movies at the end where, like, the villain is so bad.
Yeah, they're so bad. Like, my favorite example of that is Iga, the movie about the revenge fly, where, like, part of the film, you're kind of starting to feel sorry for the bad guy because he's being so, like, his life is being so screwed up out of the case of revenge. But then he becomes so evil again that you're like, no, I don't feel sorry for you anymore. Like, at this point, I'm like, okay, so he beats his daughter. And it was rough.
So, like, you're trying to say that, like, when I watch movies, I don't like any shades of gray.
No, I just
want black and white.
No shades of gray. Yeah, I don't want any shades of gray. Black and white. So, basically, with the mother, she's having a lot of dreams or whatever.
It's the lamest kind of dreams. The mother keeps dreaming of herself.
Yeah, and she's, like, floating in a forest.
It's like, imagine, like, Brazil. You know that dream sequence where they're in the clouds and it's like, yeah. Oh, Sam.
Yeah, she's just...
Can you imagine having a dream like that about yourself?
Yeah, and also you wouldn't see it that way, right? Because you'd be seeing it through... I mean, unless you're... I mean, I don't have third-person dreams, really, So she wouldn't really be having that exact experience. But the point is she tends to wake up from screaming. Whereas I had a dream of me floating in a forest, I'd wake up and I'd be like, I had a dream floating in the forest. I wouldn't be like, forests and floating, my two biggest fears. Like, maybe she said that at some point in the film. Or maybe Michael Goff had said that to her. He's like, you know, you can't go out to the forest because you're so scared of the possibility that you might start floating in one. She's like, yes, that's my dreadful fear, my worst fear. Of course, if they did have that scene, it'd be as pointless as anything else because this never matters. Like, I don't get what's... I mean, maybe the person who made the film is scared of floating in a forest, and that's why it's called Crucible of Horror.
You can jump in here, and you did some research. Some canon research, and by that I mean you looked up what Crucible means.
Yeah, so I was wondering about this because Crucible is, you know, there's the Crucible,
yes,
famous play, and I was like, wait, what is a Crucible? And a Crucible is a container that can withstand very high temperatures and used for metal, glass, and pigment production, as well as a number of modern laboratory processes.
So what does it mean in the context of this?
Nothing. Like, I mean, like, there's nothing, they don't really contain anything. I guess the idea
is... It's not like there's, like, a container and they open it up and you're like, ah! Like,
I think the idea of this movie is a crucible of horror. It contains so much horror,
yes,
right? But that would not be the case. Like, Cauldron of Blood, at least there was a cauldron in it.
There was some blood, too?
Yeah, and...
There was a skeleton that exploded?
Crucible of Terror, I guess that could have something in it that contains stuff.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe it's a metaphor for whatever in the movie.
It's my suspicion that the word crucible is misused a lot because it sounds pretty cool. You know, the word crucible, it just has like a kind of epic...
It kind of sounds like, you know, obstacles that you're going to meet and have to deal with.
Anyway, we're not synopsising this film at any speed because it's so boring, but let's get through it. Their idea to kill him, basically Edith wakes up from a dream and she basically goes, let's kill him, right? And the daughter's like, really? And she's like, yeah, let's do it. And they're like, all right, let's do it. Their plan to kill him is to let him go to the cottage at the weekend where he likes to go hunting and then turn up and act as suspicious as possible. Like, they literally turn up and they're just, like, wandering about. Like, they keep, like, moving the gun, his gun about, like, place it here, place it there. Then they're like, oh, it's, you should close the door. I'm feeling drafty. Like, but in the most awkward way where, like, you would be like, or, like, you'd be like, what's going on exactly? Like, are you planning on killing me? Because it seems like you're being very strange. And they place drugs in his drink and then point a gun at him until he's drank the drink. And he talks for a while.
And then they shoot him.
And no, they don't shoot him. They just shoot the...
And then he just dies because of the drink.
Yeah, he dies because of the drink, which as far as I can tell is just the sleeping pills that Edith takes, who's the mother. But before they kill him, the discussion they have is very confusing. Because the mother goes, I read the Marquis de Sade's book. I assume she means 120 Days of Sodom or whatever it's
called. Justine, you know, who knows?
Yeah, one of them. And he's like, what? That's a filthy, disgusting book. How could you have read that? And then the daughter's like, I read it too. I quite enjoyed it. What? A girl of 15 enjoying this book? And then he dies. And you're kind of like, what? This is like...
Did they want to anger him into the point of like the drugs taking effect?
Yeah, is that it? They just thought the most scandalous thing they could think of? Because...
Wouldn't you be like, I fucked a donkey? Because like reading a book...
I feel that a bunch of people do fuck donkeys in Marquis de Sade books, but it's just kind of like, it's kind of confusing.
Yeah.
Because like, why does it come up? Marquis de Sade does not really give anyone ideas for killing their husband necessarily. It's just a part of the film where, like, one of those parts where it's like some, much like previous ones I've watched, where like somebody had to write some stuff to fill it out, and they just like looked. So unlike in Wicked Die Slow, where the guy was in a crappy hotel room and he saw a Bible and he was like, I'll just put in a bunch of Bible verses. And this person, he just saw Mark the Sad on their table. They were like, ugh, never gonna read that. You know, like, so long.
It seems so sexy.
It seems so sexy, but it's so long. Yeah. I mean, just to describe, I mean, I have actually read it. It's 120 Days of Sodom, isn't it? Is that how many days it is? I forget.
Yeah, it's 120 Days of Sodom, yes.
Yeah, I read that and, I mean, I haven't read all of it. Because
you didn't get through all 120 days.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, like, the first, like, I don't know, 8 or 10 chapters is like more or less a day ago, right? And like literally by like day 10, they're like, you know, having sex with kids and animals and, you know, doing all kinds of stuff with poo. And by that point, by like day 10, I was like, where can this book go from here?
Did you skip to the end to see where it goes?
Because I was like, they can't go any further because it's literally just a dispassionate description of people doing disgusting things to each other. And by day 10, I couldn't think of any more. And then
maybe that's why you need this book.
I know.
That's where your simple mind ends. Yeah, book will expand.
I mean, it's possible that...
robots?
Yeah, I think robots is less disgusting than kids, to be honest. Like, unless they're children.
Robot kids.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, we have designed a robot of perfect innocence. It knows nothing but innocence. Now I will fuck it. I mean...
Mark and Asad, really. I wonder why you picked 120 days instead of like 12 days or something.
Yeah, my suspicion is...
He's like, just sitting there and he's like... He's like, fuck, day 60? He's like looking around the room. He's like, a broom, I guess? Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, my suspicion is that from like day 60, I was just like, it's like, and then they did the same stuff, but it was a bit grosser. Yeah. Or maybe it just starts to say etc. or ditto, you know? Day 72, ditto.
Same.
Yeah, anyone who wants to write in, actually, and tell me what happens for the next, you know...
Have you not seen the movie? The Pasolini film, 120 Days of Sodom?
I haven't seen that. And there's also... What's the other one? There's another one, isn't it? Sade or something like that? Or
I'm not sure. I mean, he made?
Salome? Is that not one?
Yeah, well, that's been adapted a whole bunch of times. Like, the director, Jess Franco, was a big fan of the Marquis de Sade stuff. But I don't think it went... Like you said, what's past the 10th day?
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody could write in and tell us like what happens for the rest
of
the book.
And if you don't have it, places like B&B Books seems to have hundreds of copies.
However, the most important thing to remember when reading a book by the Marquis de Sade is not to go and kill your abusive husband directly afterwards. There are much better ways to go about that. There are plenty of shelters. There are like the courts, of course. You know, there's plenty of options. You don't have to kill him because what then will proceed to happen is... You'll have to drag him up the stairs, put him in bed, make it look like a suicide or something. And then you'll go home, and then the thrilling part of this movie will be waiting for a phone call. Like, there's like 20 minutes, 30 minutes of this movie where our two heroes are just like waiting for a phone call. I mean, this is like the type of film when I was watching, I thought, I bet Ty West loves this movie because it's so boring and nothing happens. It's real House of the Devil stuff here.
Oh, controversial statement.
You know, or what's the other one? The one about the hotel that he did?
Crap, not The Innocents. It's, I don't remember.
You know, but nothing happens in that movie either.
I remember liking that one at Fantasia.
People listening to this podcast, they're like, I came here for discussion of canon movies. There have been so many tangents.
But that's what you want if we can't talk about anything.
It's true, and it is all springing off of this movie. But basically, to go back to it, they're waiting for phone calls. The first phone call, like, oh my god, it must be that they found him dead. And it's like a wee guy from down the road who's like, I was just wondering if you would go out for a date with me. I mean, I scrub up nice. And she's like, they're thinking of their alibi. She's like, oh, my father's very strict and he won't like that. He's not home yet. Click. And then the next call is like, just the son, right? The son, he's like, I don't even know what he talks about on the phone. It's so boring. He talks about something, but one of the things that he goes, he's not coming back till tomorrow. What are you expecting today? They're like, oh my God, we never realized. And you're like, why does that make a difference? That makes no difference whether or not he comes back today or tomorrow. He's dead already. But then ultimately what happens is, you don't know where he is. The son calls and he's like, look, I'm the man. I don't have to go and find him. You bitches go and get him, you know, because I'm so, you know, I've got jobs to do like a man. And they're like, oh no, what are we going to do? I have to go and find him. They go to the house. They can't find the corpse, but then you find it in a box outside, And it's
a real crucible they find him in.
Yeah, they find him in a box outside, and you're like, okay. And then a guy comes to the door. Now, at this point, I was like, the solution is, you go, oh my God, we can't find him. Help us look for him. And then you find him in the box, and you act all shocked. Or you go, Michael Goff is dead. We found him in a box. Please help us. You don't go, we must act like everything is normal by acting as suspicious as possible.
They had a really shitty plan. Like, from top to bottom, it was not very well planned out. It was in the heat of the moment, but...
It's a terrible plan. And so the guy comes, he wanders up at the house, he does a bunch of investigation for some reason, and you're like, does he know what's going on? He, like, finds a drug bottle, and he's like, he's very suspicious as well, but then just leaves. Then they go and drop Goff's body at the dump, come home...
Doesn't that defeat the purpose poisoning? Like, wouldn't they just put him back in the bed?
And he's already moved once, yes. Right? So basically, they go home. She has some more nightmares about her floating in the forest.
Again, the same thing.
Then they go downstairs. A window's been smashed. And a corpse is hanging upside down with a Michael Goff mask, which apparently... I guess it was
he loves, because there's a shot of it at the beginning of the movie. He knocks over a box and a bunch of masks fall out.
Yeah, like you could get Michael Goff masks in 1971. Was that like a hot toy for the kids? You know, mommy, look at me, I'm Michael Goff.
From TV's Batman. Hasn't been released at this
point? 1989, right?
From the future. You time travel to get a Michael Goff.
Yeah, and then the parents are like, why did we create this innocent robot? An innocent robot.
Fuck it.
We just have to fuck it now. Running around with a future Michael Goff mask.
So body's hanging upside down.
Hanging upside down in a Michael Goff mask. They never find out who that body is. And then the next morning, Michael Goff's just at breakfast. Just alive. The sun's there. Nothing has happened. And then the movie ends.
No, and the woman is like, the mother is all like frazzled and like broken.
Yeah, she's like insane now. Yeah. You know?
I have to point out that Matthew was watching the movie and I came in and distracted him for the last 10 minutes.
It's true.
So what happens at the end is like Michael Goh walks in and they scream and they're like, ah!
Yeah.
And then that's how it ends. And then you see that scene at the end where he's at dinner.
Okay, yeah, I mean, the climax is ultimately that, yeah, they like he's there, but yeah. he's not the hanging body with the mask. He's just there and he's like, ha 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 ha, I'm alive. But then when they wake up in the next morning, he acts like not everything is normal.
Yes.
Which would be fine if we had any idea of what happened for that middle section. Like, the joke is being, obviously, that he's just going to act like nothing happened.
Okay, now I have some questions.
Yes.
This is an elaborate prank on Michael Goff's part, isn't it? Because I think they find him naked in that box outside.
Yes.
So, did he, like, wait for them to arrive, get naked, like, lay in the box, hope they find him?
And it was cold out there as well. There'd been some serious shrinkage going on. Like, unless he did the traditional thing, which was like work himself up a little bit before they came out.
Give him a few pumps before.
Just to make sure that he didn't like embarrass himself when they opened the box.
It's his wife, though.
the daughter as well. I suppose that's even worse. But just the idea, it's like, oh no, it's Michael Goff and he's got a stoner.
He died that way.
Wait, that happens to corpses though, right?
Yeah, it does. If they get an erection, then it stays because the blood can't flow outward.
So you can't say on the Loose Cannons podcast you don't learn anything.
You know what? That information could be completely wrong.
I think it's true.
Yeah, that sounds about right. If TV has taught me anything, it's that happens.
Yeah.
So he did that and then he like held his breath for a while as they dumped him in the dump. Like...
Yeah, and he held his breath for the whole time. Like, he did a very elaborate dying sequence. Oh, please help me! And then he held his breath while they pulled him upstairs.
Yeah, and, like, they're, like, hitting his head against the floor. Like, if it was from his perspective, it would be quite a comedy. It'd be a crucible of comedy.
Yeah, it just... And you're like, did he know in advance they were going to do it? So he thought he'd pretend, like...
Was it all a dream? That's what you said when it ended. You're like, wait, was that all a dream then?
Yeah, like it could have been all a dream. Like, it just... I mean, the only thing that really stood out for me at the end... I mean, because it seems like it's sort of supposed to be a bit funny. Like, because the way the dad is about
stuff. It's No Horror Hospital.
Yeah.
No, or Horror Hotel. What was it called? The one that we watched? Because Michael Gow was in that one, too.
Oh, the one about the hippie who goes on holiday?
Yeah.
That's the... I thought it was called Horror Hospital, but maybe I'm wrong. Because it's like a hospital for hippies who are feeling like stressed, right? Isn't it?
It's something like that. I don't. Yeah, I think it's Horror Hospital. Because Horror Hotel is something with Christopher Lee and he wasn't in
that one. I really enjoyed it. If you want to watch a movie that from that era that stars Michael Goff, I really actually liked Horror Hospital.
What? It's also known as Computer Killer? What? Computer Killers. And that's probably wrong. It's probably IMDb like pointing you in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Horror Hospital is... So that's from a few years later, right?
Yeah, 2 years later, 1973.
Yeah, so if you want to watch a movie that's actually kind of amusing...
I wouldn't even make it like a hard recommendation. It's kind of like, if you're like, I need something with my favorite butler from Batman in a horror movie with horror in the title.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a hard recommendation. I don't really, because of how British it feels. This is a very British feel as well, but a very boding British feel. Like Horror Hospital has a lot of kind of like wacky... because it stars the guy... from those Confessions of Window Cleaner movies. You might know who that guy is. So basically, it's got a full lot of sort of slapsticky comedy. While he's escaping the horror hospital, he literally like stops to like grab a sandwich and stuff like that, which is obviously ad-libbed and it's very amusing.
But Crucible of Horror, not good.
Not good. I mean, the thing I was going to point out is at the end is when he's reading one of the daughter's letter, he tuts written with a biro. Like writing with a biro pen is like...
What's so a biro?
A biro is like, you know, like a Bic pen, you know the...
Oh, is this a brand?
Just like a pen, yeah.
No, I don't think I've ever heard that before. Maybe it's one of your European things,
yeah. But just like, this movie was incredibly boring.
It was so boring. We're so sorry for this podcast.
No, I mean, I think we did enough tangents that anyone could listen to.
And for anyone who brings it up, yes, I know that it's inspired by Le Diabolique. But Matthew hasn't seen that movie, so we can't really talk about it. But it's basically the same plot, where people murder someone, they think he's dead, and he's haunting them, but at the end, he's not dead. Oh, sorry, spoiler for a movie that came out, like, 50 years ago.
Yeah, I don't care. But, I mean, like, in terms of the canon...
No.
Under no circumstances, this is not... And in terms of if you should consider watching this, no, absolutely not. This is... probably. Is this the most boring one we've seen?
Boring?
Yeah.
You know what? I would probably have to say yeah. Because nothing is going on in this movie. At least, like, a Joe Sarno picture. Man, I cannot wait till, like, we stop talking about Joe Sarno.
I know.
Where we don't have to say his name. At least there's, like, kind of interesting stuff going on. Like in Inga or To Ingrid, My Love, Lisa. But this one had nothing. And, like, the copy that we watched, it's on YouTube if you want to go and watch it.
Yeah.
Full. It's, like, really muddy and ugly looking, so it's not even pleasant to watch either. There were some kind of cool camera shots at the end, like the woman running down the stairs. It's, like, her point of view, but it's not a recommendation.
Yeah, I mean, for whoever was asking, well, where we'd rank these, this one is now, like, dead last.
Yeah, it's at the bottom, definitely. Before Inga?
Wait, Inga's quite high up.
No, sorry, not Inga. Made in Sweden.
Yeah, I'd say below Made in Sweden.
Yeah.
Because, like, Made in Sweden, I mean, as our letter writer last week, Jay, pointed out, like, it's got a naked lady in it for a lot of it.
Yep.
And you can never be bored if there's a naked lady in front of you.
Well, I mean, even though
you totally can be. You can
yeah,
be.
You totally can be. All right, enough about Crucible of Horror. Let us never speak of cauldrons or crucibles ever again. Up next is Who Killed Mary What's-Her-Name?
Yep, starring Oscar-nominated?
Winner.
Oscar winner. Red Buttons.
And that amuses you to no end, doesn't it?
Yeah, because this film is also called Death of a Hooker. So, like, the idea of, like, you know, Oscar winner Red Buttons being in Death of a Hooker just doesn't...
But you make it sound like Red Buttons is, like, a childish, like, fan favorite that, like, I said he was European or something like that, but... No, he's just like, I think he's an American actor, isn't he?
Yeah, he's an American actor, but he was like fairly famous in like the 50s, I think.
And he just has a really goofy name.
He's a
Red Buttons.
Yeah, Red Buttons.
He sounds like a clown of some sort.
Yeah, like or like a really dirty 70s comedian, you know, like...
Here comes Red Buttons!
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to watch that next. The film, probably our first, is rated PG, even though it dealt with prostitution and murder.
Okay, well, I'm excited for our first PG.
Who killed Mary? What's her name? That'll be next week on Loose Cannons. And if you have any questions, comments, complaints,
if you want to tell us what happens at the end of Marquis de Sade's 120 Days of Sodom,
email us at loosecannonspodcast@gmail.com. My name's Justin McClue.
I'm Matthew Kumar.
And thanks for listening.